I'd like to begin today by reading a quotation from Alan Loy McGinnis from his study of optimism called The Power of Optimism. This is what he says, quote, "Recent studies show that optimists excel in school, have better health, make more money, establish long and happy marriages, stay connected to their children, and even live longer," unquote. Well, you know, I look at a quote like that and I say, hey, you know what? If I excelled in school, had better health, and made more money, I'd be an optimist too. And that's how most people view things like that. They look at the situation and say, if circumstances were better, if the situation were better, I would be optimistic. But because of my circumstances, the challenges I have, how hard it is to live the life I live, I am a bit of a pessimist. When things change, I'll be more of an optimist. And here's what I want to focus on for this month's study. Number one, optimism is programming. It isn't a character trait. It isn't a personality characteristic. It is a program. It's a computer program that's used or not used. The same is true with pessimism. I want to quote right now from Dr. Martin Seligman on pessimism. He is the ultimate expert on studies of the function of optimism. What he's done over the years is study how functional optimism is, how functional pessimism is. That's his focus. Let me read you his quote. Very, very interesting. Quote, "Why should we bother to learn to think optimistically? Isn't pessimism just a posture with no real effects? Unfortunately not. I've studied pessimism for the last 20 years, and in more than 1,000 studies involving more than 500,000 children and adults, pessimistic people do worse than optimistic people in three ways. First, they get depressed much more often. Second, they achieve less at school, on the job, and on the playing field, much less than their talents would suggest. Third, their physical health is worse than that of optimists. So holding a pessimistic theory of the world may be the mark of sophistication, but it is a costly one," unquote. Now that's a very interesting thing that Dr. Seligman has concluded there. What he has concluded is that pessimism has a really powerful negative effect on the outcomes and the lives of people who use that programming. And one of the most important things I'd like to point out is that pessimism is a programming that's used by people, and so is optimism. It is not something that's linked to genetics or permanent personality in any way. Let's look at the studies done by Dr. Seligman one more time. Now, he studied people for 20 years. He studied over 500,000 people. 500,000 people were studied by Dr. Seligman. And he came to two basic conclusions. And when we grasp the significance of these conclusions, we can use them in our own lives to have selling go better, have leadership go better, and have everything go better that has a measurable outcome. These are the two conclusions he found after 20 years of studying 500,000 people. And the only reason I keep repeating that is most people who come up with conclusions and theories about positive thinking or optimism or anything that sounds like that, they usually have some study group or some people they've studied for 2 weeks or maybe a family history or something like that, and you want to doubt their conclusions. What Seligman has done is with an entire team of scientists and social scientists, he has studied people for 20 years to come up with these conclusions. Not only that, but the psychiatric community, the psychological community, the medical community have honored his studies and have validated them as being not only statistically accurate and verifiable and reliable, but they've honored him for being so significant. These are the two findings, the most powerful outcomes he found, and the most distinctive. Number one, optimism makes you more effective than pessimism. I'll repeat it. Optimism makes you more effective at whatever you're doing than pessimism does. That's the first thing he found. The second thing he found was the one finding, the one discovery that was the most powerful and the most surprising to people, even to psychologists, and that's this. Optimism can be learned. And so that goes against everything that people seem to think and talk about in life. They talk about how people are and what they're like. I have people come up to me in courses and they say, you know, I don't quite buy into this yet because I have small children and one of them's this way and one of them's the other way and we've raised them the same way. And how come one of them's outgoing and the other one's real shy and withdrawn? We didn't do anything different, so it's got to be some kind of permanent characteristic that they were born with. And really, that's not true. Yes, there are tendencies we're born with. For example, I'm right-handed, and that tendency was there when I was born. But if I wished to, I could develop greater skill with my left hand for just about anything that I wanted to through repetition. The same is true with optimism and pessimism. You can have one child who's very outgoing in childhood, just totally laughing, outgoing, loves to meet people, talk to people, not shy. The other child, the younger child, is shy, withdrawn. But somehow, for whatever reason, as they go out into life, the shy child has taken on a commitment to be more outgoing, has really linked being outgoing with joy and success, maybe taken on a profession that that child loved and needed to be outgoing to succeed at, and through repetition, through practice, has taken that characteristic on and made it look like a characteristic when really it's only a habit. So we really behave according to habit, although it looks like personality characteristics, character defects, and things like that. That's such an important distinction because if we want to change our outcomes, if we want to change the results we get, it isn't necessary to have a new personality or wish we didn't have the personality we have. All that's necessary is to develop some new habits through repetition. Habits are developed through repetition. Optimism is a habit. Pessimism is a habit. Optimism makes you more effective than pessimism. Therefore, as far as the program you're going to use to think with, to speak with, to analyze with, if you use the programming known as optimism, you'll reach your goals faster. It's a proven, scientific, undeniable fact. If you use that programming that we call pessimism, and you'll only use it as your primary programming if that's your habit, and it'll only be your habit if you repeatedly do it. If you use that programming, you'll be less effective, and there's no way around that, and there's no denying that. Now, my question is this. Why would someone take on the programming of pessimism? There's got to be a payoff. I mean, if it's really true that an optimistic person is more effective, why wouldn't everybody automatically become an optimist, just out of trial and error? And the answer is usually this. Pessimism has a kind of perceived short-term payoff for people. People think, if I go into this conversation with someone I'm leading, or if I go into this sales opportunity, already thinking it probably won't work out, then I won't be so disappointed. If I go into the conversation telling myself, I don't think this is going to go anywhere. I think this is like a lottery ticket here. I don't think this has very high chance of succeeding for me. Then, when it doesn't succeed, I can walk away saying, well, that wasn't a big surprise to me. That went pretty much like I thought it would go. And I walk away without that sense of disappointment, without my hopes being dashed, without that really bad feeling of crashing from high hopes. Here's the problem with that. Yes, I do get the payoff of not having a crash from high hopes, but the downside is, although I don't get very many specific disappointments in my day, if I'm a pessimist, my life is disappointing. My entire life is a disappointment. Because of the programming I'm using, because of the premise I'm approaching everything with, this probably won't work out, things like this never go as well as you hope, all that programming, yes, it makes me ready when things don't go well, but it puts a kind of underlighting for my entire life of disappointment. I'm already pre-programmed for life itself to be a disappointment. There's a second downside to pessimism. When I go into a conversation, when I go into any kind of situation, whether I'm selling or leading or both, because selling is leading and leading is selling, when I'm doing that, I have shut off a lot of opportunity. In other words, I've narrowed my mind. I've taken the scope of what's possible in this conversation, and I've narrowed it down to a very limited, probably won't go well channel. This limits my creativity. Anytime I can walk in thinking, we could have a breakthrough. This could be great. There's all kinds of good places this talk could go. When I go in with that programming, which is primarily what optimistic programming is, it's really possibility thinking, then I can see things in the other person's talk that I wasn't going to see before. And when the other person says something that other people would perceive as an objection, I can hear it as an opportunity, or I can hear it as a chance to really get close to this person. That's what optimism does. It expands the mind. What's ironic is that pessimists will tell you that they are realists, that they're only being realistic. They'll say, somebody has to be a realist around here. But really, they're not being realistic. Because being realistic is seeing all possibilities. Being pessimistic is shutting yourself down from possibility. That is not realistic. You won't meet very many people who walk up to you and say, hey, hi. Hi, Steve. Glad to meet you. I'm a pessimist. People won't say that typically. In fact, I've never heard anyone say that. What people will say very proudly is, well, I'm a realist, so I don't think this is going anywhere. That's not really realism. Pessimism is contaminated thinking. Pessimism is artificially limited thinking. It is done so, it is designed that way, to make the person going into the event already be ready emotionally for failure, so they won't be surprised. Optimism, on the other hand, believes deep down this could work. Something might happen here. We could have a breakthrough. This person might really be open to talking to me and accepting my idea and moving forward and creating a great relationship with me. Now, that's more realistic because that really could happen. The minute I don't think that could happen, I shut my whole system down. I shut my physiology down. I shut my facial expression down. I don't look as warm. I don't look as hopeful. People don't bond with me as fast. And everything shuts down. Pessimism becomes self-fulfilling. Optimism makes you more effective than pessimism because, truly, it's more realistic. Pessimism artificially shuts down possibilities, so it is unrealistic. It's contaminated thinking. Now, let's look at the other finding that Dr. Seligman found in his studies on optimism and pessimism. This was the most controversial finding. Number two, optimism can be learned. Most of what we hear and most of what gets programmed into our heads as we grow up from our families, from television, from movies, is that people have permanent personalities. And that's just the way they are, and that's what I'm like, and that's how I am. And that's just the way I'm always skeptical. I'm always cynical. I never believe it till I see it. And people get trapped in there and they shut down their possibilities for success. The truth is, optimism is simply a language. It's programming. It can be learned by anyone. Anyone can learn to go into a conversation or a negotiation or an introduction or a demonstration or anything that those of us who are in leadership and sales positions go into moment after moment, day after day. Anyone can learn to go into those situations with an optimistic approach. I believe this is going to go great. Even if it doesn't go great, that's going to teach me something about the other person that I'm going to be able to use to eventually create a great relationship. This will be fine no matter how it goes. This is step one in a long-time, long-term relationship I'm creating. I can't wait. I can't wait to see this person. Let me tell you something that happened to me once. I used to work at a car dealership many, many years ago. And whenever they got a rookie salesperson, someone who's brand new, there was a manager there that I had a relationship with. I was doing all the marketing and advertising at the time for him. And he would call in this rookie. And there'd be somebody out on the lot, some buyer, some customer who'd been on the lot earlier in the day and was kind of nasty, and now they're back. And this manager had kind of a sick sense of humor. And so he would call the rookie salesperson over, and he would say, "Oh, there they are again. Those are the Smiths. They're ready to buy. We're real sweethearts, really wonderful people. Why don't you take this one? I know you're kind of down. You haven't really had many sales. You haven't had many opportunities. I'm going to give this one to you. You go do this one, okay? I talked to him earlier. Just go do this one. All this person wants is to finalize and to make the final pick, and so this is yours. You can have this one." And the salesperson would say, "Whoa, thanks. Man, thank you." And then we'd watch the salesperson go out. And in reality, these customers would be the nastiest, grumpiest, tire kickers, and macho, I only shop for price type people. And the salesperson would go out there, and you'd see them out on the lot, and everybody would be kind of chuckling. And the salesperson would be smiling and nodding, and they'd be talking for the longest time, and they'd be walking around looking at cars, and they'd be talking. Pretty soon we'd be saying, "Gee, what's up with that? What's going on?" And then finally the salesperson comes in, sits them down, signs papers, gets keys, and lo and behold, a sale was made. Now, what happened there? What happened was the salesperson walked out the door totally optimistic before talking to that person. The salesperson was already believing, already saturated with the mindset of, "Wow, what a gift, a wonderful prospect for me, handed to me on a silver platter." And then the salesperson would go out and behave accordingly. Very grateful, very nice, very accommodating. And even when the buyer was gruff or this, the salesperson just interpreted that as, well, that's just what they're like. That's what they do before they finalize. And I saw it happen over and over again, so that it wasn't just some lucky coincidence. It was pre-programming for success, and it works. It always works. W. Clement Stone used to tell a really funny story. He used to own an insurance company, and at one point he hired his nephew to be a salesperson. And his nephew would come in really lost, really didn't know how to sell insurance, and was really scared. And he came in and he talked to his uncle, and he said, "Please, can you help me out? Can you give me some leads just to get me started? I just want to go out there and make my first sale and really have my first experiences, and I've been cold calling and it hasn't worked. Can you help me?" And Mr. Stone looked at him and said, "All right, come back in an hour, and I'll give you some good leads. I'll give you some good names. And you can use my name, and you can get started that way. But I want you to understand that after this, I'm not going to give leads like this away. You're going to have to earn it." And he said, "Oh, I will, Uncle. I'll earn it, I promise." So the nephew came back in an hour, and the nephew came in, And Mr. Stone said, now here's 8 names that I've found. Some of them I haven't talked to in a long time. So when you talk to them, tell them I told you to call. They might not remember who I am right away until you mention my name. So please do this, and good luck to you. But remember, after this, you're on your own. And the nephew was really grateful, and he said thank you, and he went out. And a couple months went by, and Mr. Stone heard that he sold a very high percentage of those. I think he got 4 out of those 8 to buy insurance. Then a couple months went by, and the nephew came back in and said, Uncle Stone, I told you I'd never come back in here, but I'm just plateaued. I've hit a wall. I don't know why. Those first sales went great, and then I haven't been able to generate anything for myself. I'm not in a great territory. Yeah, I mean, I just have to tell you, I'm not complaining, but they've put me in like a newcomer's territory, and so I wonder if you could help me here. If you were to just give me 8 more names, I promise you, I could use that to pay my rent and get myself fired up again, and I will really take this on. I'll really learn how to do it. So Mr. Stone said, sure, I'll do that. And then his nephew said, okay, well, you want me to come back in a while for him? And he said, no, just stay here. I'll give him to you right now. And Mr. Stone reached down. He picked up the phone book, and he put it on his desk, and he opened it at random. He said, ready to write these names down? And his nephew kind of stared at him and said, yeah. And he said, because I'm giving them to you from the same place I got them before. I just picked them at random out of the phone book. That's what I'm going to do now. I didn't know those people. They might have recognized my name. I'm pretty well known in Chicago. But it was in your mind, my son, that you thought they were prime candidates. You thought these were precious leads. And you took your time and you converted them into sales. And if you think that your cold calling is not that, then that won't work for you. So here, let me give you 8 names. But in the future, I'm going to hand you this book so you can take it with you. You can use it too. And it is unlimited how many leads are in this book. It's infinite. So in order to begin to program myself optimistically, in order to learn the habit, and continue the habit of using the optimistic programming, it helps to know various ways that programming shows up. Optimism is a habit. Optimism is a habit caused by repeated actions. Pessimism is also a habit. So one trend for optimists is, number one, optimists seldom get upset with problems. So that's a very interesting thing, because pessimists typically get very upset when there's a problem. When there's trouble or a problem, a pessimist will get upset over it and will upset themselves and say, oh no, look at this, look at that, I expected it, but still it's upsetting. And they get upset enough in their own mind to where they're going to do something about it. And they've fallen into that habit. It's usually a carryover from childhood. And subconsciously, here's how they're doing it. If I get upset enough about this, I'll probably do something about it. If I make myself so upset that I can't stand it anymore, I'll probably take some action. Well, that's one way to do things. But it is very difficult on relationships. If you're in a relationship that's personal at home or a family relationship, and the way you program your action-taking mechanism is to wait until you're so upset that you're finally going to take action, then it causes tremendous stress, if not division and complete breakdown of the relationship with the other person. Because it's very hard to live with someone who upsets themselves as a method for them to take action, who makes themselves upset. Now, an optimist does not do that. And when I say optimist, I mean someone who has repeated optimism enough times so that it appears to be who they are. It's only a habit. What an optimist does when a problem comes up or trouble comes up is say, okay, great, now let's attack this. What do we need to do? An optimist starts with this premise. Every group of human relationships is going to have problems. Every company is going to have problems. Every marriage is going to have problems. Every parent-child relationship will have problems in it. That's just the nature of it. There's nothing wrong with that. That's how we stay alive and alert to it. That's how we stay awake. And so, because I know there are going to be problems, why do I get upset and shocked and surprised and offended when one comes up? I don't want them to come up, but when they come up, I say, okay, deep breath, let's look at it. What can be done? What needs to be done? What action can I take? And what can happen that's really good from solving this problem? Now, here's another aspect, another habit that optimists do that's very important. Optimists look for partial solutions. Optimists don't play this all-or-nothing game that pessimists do. Pessimists' approach is, if I can't have it all, I don't want any of it. If I can't think of the solution right now, I don't want to think about it. If I can't see the final outcome, I don't want to even let my mind go there. Don't go there. Now, an optimist says, look, I don't see the final result. I don't see how we're going to get from A to Z. But I think I can see how to get from A to B. Let's try it. And then from B, we might go to C. See, the optimist is willing to break things down into small actions, short steps, and by the end, the optimist is at the end. Yeah, we solved it. Yes, we got this deal done. Yes, I solved that employee problem. Yes, I got that big contract for us. Because I went from A to B, and then I went from B to C. Then I went from C to D, and that's all I did, and that's all I ever do. I don't try to do it all at once, because you can't always see it all at once. Optimists look for partial solutions. Number three, an optimist, which is different than a pessimist, will allow for regular renewal. In other words, here's what an optimist does. When they feel burned out, stressed out, overwhelmed, burdened, they don't say, oh, wow, what a profession this is. There's so much burnout. What a stressful profession I'm in. I'm so overwhelmed, I'm swamped. They don't take that route. They say, time for renewal, time for recharging. And rather than saying, I'm now wiped out, I'm stressed, I'm going to crash, they say, I'm going to recharge. I'm going to just sit back and do nothing for a little bit and allow myself to recharge and renew. And if I even take a vacation and go away, I'll let myself renew. I'll let myself recharge. I won't think to myself, oh, what a horrible profession. I have to get away from it. That's an option. I could think that way. But if I begin thinking that way, it becomes a habit. And if I habitually look at things that way, it takes my physiology down. It takes my emotions down to their lowest level. Optimists enjoy renewing themselves. Let me get away for a little while. Let me recharge. Let me renew. Let me come back real fresh in the morning. Things will look different, and they always do. Number four, another habit that optimists use. And by using the habit, it makes them look like an optimist, permanent characteristic optimist to other people, but really they're not. They've just taken enough of these actions so it becomes natural and normal for them to be this way. And that's this. Optimists interrupt their negative trains of thought. In other words, an optimist will be walking down the street or driving in her car or on the way to the post office or at any point, and all of a sudden a negative train of thought will start. Oh no, look at this. I can't see ever getting this done. Look at my goal. Look at the goal they've set for me this month. Boy, if I wasn't so good, they wouldn't punish me with these high goals. They never appreciate how good I am around here. This is very discouraging to me. Now, they notice, an optimist notices, that every one of these cars on the train is making them feel worse. In other words, this negative train of thought is taking me physiologically someplace that I don't want to go. because I'm feeling a crash. I'm feeling that sinking feeling. And so, it is easy for an optimist to say, okay, time out. I'm not going to go there. That's the end of that. What's my next thought? That line of thinking isn't going to help. Now, question for myself, what would be a great way to apply my thinking at this very moment? What could I open up for myself as far as possibility goes? What could I think about right now that would help me hit my goal, that would make my relationships better, that would get me back on track? And then after a question like that, they start to think of a prospect or a customer or an employee that they really want to have a great conversation with, and all of a sudden they're back on track. Now, anyone can do this, but the pessimist is in the habit of allowing negative trains of thought to just go on and on wherever it goes, and they never stop it. They don't really realize that they have control over their own thinking. They don't really realize that they have a pause button, they have a rewind button, they have a stop button, they have a fast forward button on their own thinking. And that's what's primarily different. An optimist is an optimist because she or he realizes I'm in charge. My feelings come from my thinking, and I'm in charge of my thinking. Therefore, I'm in charge of my mood, my attitude, my morale. I'm in charge of my life. All it takes is some practice. And the primary practice is this. When I catch myself going down one of those side roads of discouraging thinking, I can always call a timeout on it and say, okay, that's great, but don't go there. I understand why you'd think that, but it's not going to help you get what you want in life. So let's go here. Let's think this. Let's think about that for a while. Anyone can do this. And every time you do it, it gets easier. Pretty soon you're doing it before the negative thought even gets out. You think, okay, that's nice, but that's not going to help me today. It's not part of what I'm up to right now. It's true, it's understandable, all that. I can empathize with that negative feeling. But for now, I want to hit my goals. For now, I want to be prosperous. For now, I want to have fun. For now, I'm going to stop that thought and go somewhere else. And then the fifth habit I want to talk about that optimists do through repetition is that they heighten their powers of appreciation. In other words, they simply practice appreciating people. They talk to a customer, they talk to a coworker, they talk to their own manager, they talk to the team they're leading, they talk to a prospective customer, they talk to a gatekeeper, they talk to a doctor, they talk to anyone, and they appreciate that person. They begin to practice appreciation. They tell them what they appreciate. They think about what they appreciate. In fact, even before the conversation, they get so practiced at this that they ask themselves the question, okay, I'm about to have a talk with this person. I remember coming by to see her about a month ago. She was really nice to me. She gave me her time. She took her time. She showed me a place to sit. She got me an appointment. I want to remember to thank her for that the minute I walk in. I don't want to go in cold and not even remember her very well and think about, am I going to forget her name? And I just say, hi, remember, I'm Steve Chandler. I'm from the Chandler Training Corporation, and I don't know if you remember me. Oh, yeah, I remember you. Great. Can I see so-and-so? I mean, that's just a completely missed opportunity. I want to appreciate. I came in here to say hi, and before I say anything, I want to thank you again for the last time I was here. That was really great of you. Now, I'm wondering if so-and-so is still in. May I see him? May I leave something for him? And so I want to heighten my power of appreciation. The same way, if I wanted to heighten the power of my right arm, I would exercise my right arm. That would be very obvious. If someone told you, they'd give you $1 million if you could lift a certain amount of weight with your right arm in a year from now, you'd know exactly what to do. You'd say, okay, you're on. And you'd go to the club and you'd start lifting weights until you could get to that level. You'd collect your $1 million. Well, that's the power in your arm that you know is there. What an optimist knows, that a pessimist doesn't know is that appreciation is like a muscle. It grows with use. And so the more I appreciate aspects of my job, people in my life, customers that I call on, prospects, people I manage, people I lead, the more I appreciate those people, the easier it is to appreciate them, the more natural it is for me to appreciate them, and the more comfortable I get appreciating them. Now, one of the benefits of that practice, and it's only a practice, it isn't a personality characteristic, like, oh, he's a real nice person. He always appreciates me. It's a practice. With everybody, it's a practice. So the benefit of that practice, one of the many benefits, aside from building great relationships really fast, is that it increases and improves my overall sense of optimism, my overall sense of hopefulness, my overall joy of living is increased the more I appreciate. Now you say, which came first, the appreciation or the thing that was worthy of appreciation? And the answer is, the more you look inside another person for things to appreciate about that person, the more you'll find. It's all there. As I appreciate everywhere I go, in the calls I make, and in the visits I make, and in the phone calls I make, and the emails I send, the more I appreciate, the better I get at appreciating, and the more I appreciate my job, the more I appreciate my life, the more people appreciate me, and it is a never-ending spiral upward. And if you don't believe it, what I'm asking you is, for the next 30 days, every conversation you have, before you start it, ask yourself, what is there here that I appreciate that I haven't expressed yet that I could express at the beginning of the conversation? That's what an optimist does. That's what an optimist practices. And that's what puts the optimistic programming into that mind that leads to the success that is verified and measured by people like Dr. Seligman every time they study a group of optimists versus a group of pessimists. Now, a pessimist, on the other hand, will wait until he finds something worthy of appreciation in order to appreciate it. So a pessimist spends his whole life tapping his toe, his hands on his hips, rolling his eyes, looking around, saying, why doesn't somebody do something worth appreciating so that I could appreciate someone? Why don't I have the life that other people have? How come it feels like when I was born, everyone else got an instruction book and I didn't get mine? And the answer to that is this. There is an instruction book, but the instruction book only says this. To have a life that you enjoy and appreciate, it is necessary to practice enjoyment and appreciation.